Hey, good evening, everybody. I hope you have an amazing time wherever you are in the world. And I'm delighted that we have got Professor Hamamoto Cultural Forensics with us this evening. And I know many of you are always saying, when's the professor coming back on? Well, here he is, and it's always a great delight. He's got such a soothing voice, I find, and his energy and his warmth. It's just a really nice person to speak to. You certainly are. And all of the professor's links are in the description box. So many of you saw, I think it was Saturday night, we put out the full 6 hours DOJ interview with Maxwell, but we've not actually done any commentary on it yet. And the professor's watched most of it as well. So we are going to start out with that subject. That is part of the network. If you guys have got any questions about what the professor is an expert on, the intelligence and rap and music and the infiltration of intelligence in academia, etc. And we've also got the bibliography in the description box. Don't hesitate to put your question in the chat, please. So, but great to see you, my friend.
Mr. Atwood, thank you so much for the invitation. Hello, friends and neighbors around the world. We're going to have a great conversation today.
When you were watching Maxwell, then what were you thinking about the energy coming off her and the way she was speaking? Because she was really giggly in parts, very posh, very using very highfalutin words
Oh,
and
yes.
stuff. And
I wanted to address that. You
yeah,
have the
let's go
clash
for it.
of cultures and the complementarity of cultures. You have Oxford. She mentions her British accent in passing a little bit. It's not just British, it's Oxfordian. All right. She went to undergraduate school. She is posh. She's fancy. But on the other end, you have one Todd Blanche. And this is part of my cultural forensics methodology. I look at the periphery people. Remember when we talked about Sean John Combs? We looked at Maureen Comey and we looked at Tina Garagos, the people who seemingly are at the periphery. But these are the ones who are orchestrating this little dance, this pas de deux, right? This little performance. And that's what it is. I think everybody sees this. Thanks to people such as yourself, who's written extensively about this. We'll get back to this book in a moment. And then your friend, your colleague, my friend, Kirby Summers. And I just mentioned this at the outset because I do not want people to be demoralized by this, what seems to be culminating in another miscarriage of justice or injustice, the Department of Justice, the US DOJ, because when it gets down to it, the people's court wins, right? We have a permanent, thanks to you, thanks to people like Kirby, some of their others. You had Mr. Andrew Lowney the other day. Great conversations, by the way. I read his books, and I'm the his most recent one on the House of York is En Route. And I encourage you to buy these books because, as I've learned, the editors, the powerful editors, the people who are in charge of X and all the publishing houses are already starting to alter the text. The e-book version of that book by Andrew Lowney is different from the hard copy. So I ordered the hard copy. I'm going to have the original. It's going to be a collectible, collector's item. So I always get the hard copy. There's a reason why the, and I'm not saying don't buy the ebooks, okay? Don't get me wrong. But there's a reason why they're called Kindle, because it's kindling. We need the hard copy. This is the people's court. This is the court of public opinion. This is really what matters. The little puppet show that we just witnessed a couple of days ago or heard about and read the transcripts, and I thank Kirby Summers for sending. I'm a subscriber to her Substack. She sent everything over, the audio and the printed files, the court transcripts. So I went through them, fairly carefully. And one thing I notice is that it's kind of like softcore porn. Intentionally so. This guy, oh, I forgot to finish my thought about Oxford versus, I think he's from the Midwest someplace, Todd Blanche. He went to Brooklyn Law School. Okay, he went to Brooklyn Law School. And the other character, David Oscar Marks, he's, of course, a magna cum laude graduate of, guess what, Harvard University. So you have this social class division here that's not really a fair contest, right? Because you can tell by his intonation, the way he addresses the well-spoken, posh Ghislaine Maxwell, that he feels like he's her social subordinate. He is a knave to the princess. This is how I read it from a cultural forensic standpoint. I'm looking at sociolex. I'm looking at educational background, socialization, social network of the peripheral people, the courtiers, the people like Todd Blanche. And most of you know, your viewers know, that Todd Blanche is intimately related professionally, maybe even personally, to one Donald John Trump. I don't have to review that again. Most of you know this already. So there seems to be, from the get-go, to put it lightly, a conflict of interest. Plus, but we can also see, because we're perceptive by now, we've trained ourselves to see through the shuck over the last several years, thanks to, ironically, social medias, right? We were able to see that these people here are trying to negotiate a soft landing for Ghislaine Maxwell. And she's already been transported, I think, to someplace in Texas. She's on sort of limited supervision. She's not in the big house anymore. She's not wearing her prison orange. She's doing better than country club type of life. And they're going to wait until, I think, we're talking about they, meaning Trump, his people. They're going to wait till the holidays to let her out, because it's not far off. It's August is almost over. And then he could also make it like I'm forgiving you for in the spirit of the holidays. And people will have forgotten by now. There's going to be a new scandal by that time that's going to erupt. In fact, the scandal by the end of the year might be more closely focused on Donald J. Trump himself. He blew it. He tried to sweep it under the rug like he's done for most of his professional and personal life. But he wasn't the president of the United States at the time. Now he is. The eyes of the world, not just the American people, the eyes of the world is fixed carefully on what and how Trump handles this latest adversity that he's being faced. And Todd Blanche is not going to be able to pull his willy out of the ringer this time. He's trapped. Because Todd Blanche is, I don't know if you picked this up, you have to hear the audio versions of the day and a half worth of hearings or the proffer discussion, but he's on her side. You mentioned, Mr. Atwood, at the outset how giggly she was. This is a club. They're friends. They're talking amongst themselves. But courtroom procedure requires that they provide a written transcript and a audio one if necessary, so that we, the public, can hear this. Because if all this was going on in secret, which they would have preferred, we would have assumed that there was justice that's being done. But now, for all the world to see, we're understanding how justice is really dispensed in certain courtroom situations, not for the hoi polloi like us, the normal people, but for those who are of this stature, This is the type of justice they can get. So let's take a look at, if we may, at the other principal who came from Harvard, and that is David Oscar Marx. Well, it's all one giant daisy chain. He's a protege of one Alan Dershowitz. That was a professor of his at Harvard Law. So it's one giant daisy chain connected. Now there's another sub. It's not even a subtext. It's out there, up front and center. But MSM is not going to cover it. Indy News does to a certain degree, but I'm going to put it right out there. There's a third party that's involved in this whole discussion, and that's the state of Israel, right? Last time I was on, we talked about our mutual great influence, Mr. Gordon Thomas, right, and his intense study of not just British, but Israeli and American intelligence establishment, right? And I talked about the concept of the Sa'im. It's a Hebrew word. Write that down, jot it down, look it up. Sa'im. And literally it means helper or assistant. But more politically, it means someone who's on the inside that's going to help you get your case through, right? And that's who David Oscar Marx is. He is a Sa'im, just like Alan Dershowitz is a Sa'im. He's proud about it. He's written books on it. He speaks to it. He is the king of chutzpah. He wrote a book called Chutzpah. Right? And this whole calling of the trial by this Harvard graduate, David Oscar Marx, is the ultimate in chutzpah. Well, I take it back. This takes a second place probably to Lyle and Eric Menendez, saying, please let us out. We blew away our parents, but now we're orphans. So please forgive us, right? Of course, they're the ones who created the orphan situation, but that's the definition of chutzpah. So we're seeing Alan Dershowitz's jurisprudence, Sa'im, jurisprudence in action. Now, this is one of the important lessons that I want to communicate to your above average audience. There's a geopolitical subtext in operation. Have you spring Ghislaine Maxwell? You're also springing the state of Israel. You're also springing, you're disentangling Donald Trump, or you're getting him out of the trap that he's set for himself, or he fell into with his relationship, his business relationships, political, continuing political and personal relationships with Israel and the intelligence agencies. He is, he does belong to intelligence, as one of your hosts has agreed to. This is the accurate characterization. So this is David Oscar Marx. If you want to check out his website, he's really good at the socials. He's a younger man, so he knows the value of TikTok and Instagram and having a blog and a YouTube channel and all that. I mean, they cover it all now. He probably has some really well-trained interns working for him at his office that are revolutionizing the way the criminal law is being practiced for a certain class, a certain set in Anglo-American society. So he's got it all nailed down. However, he did not account for someone like a Sean Atwood. He did not account for someone like a Professor Hamamoto, who's been studying this for decades, looking at it from the inside out, and he was able to break it down methodically, institutionally, through a methodology that he's perfected over the years that he calls cultural forensics, right? That's how we achieve justice. This is how we get the satisfaction of having these miscreants receive their true due justice in the eyes of God, right? And you informed me, and I checked furiously really quickly before this cast began, that there's going to be a new book out, The Memoirs of Virginia Giuffre. Let's not forget her. She is one of the key parties in this whole discussion, this proffer agreement, but her name is, I don't think, uttered it even once. All the victims are conveniently left out of the talk. And the transcripts, by the way, the printed ones, the written ones, transcribed ones, it has an index there for the people who can get a hold. You can see proper names and places and themes, and you can check and go right to the place where they talk about certain figures, including one Ehud Barak. His name is raised in volume one of it, Ehud Barak. And what does Todd Blanche do? As soon as the name comes, he just moves on to the next topic. What is his favorite topic in the whole day and a half discussion? There's a copy of the book. It's by Nigel. Oh, that's a previous book, isn't it?
Nigel. Is that the previous one?
Yes, I think so. Because what I read is that the new one was edited or co-authored by a woman by the name of Amy Wallace.
You are right. Let me get that one.
However, I mean, let me take this time to ask a question. I thought Amy Wallace was dead. I recognize the name. She's a prominent author. She's the daughter of a previous generation popular novelist by the name of Irving Wallace. The family name is Wallachinsky. She has a brother named David Wallachinsky, who wrote a really nice book, The Class of 65, truly Americana. Amy Wallace and her brother David wrote a book called The Book of Lists. So anyway, she has a bona fide. She's a publishing insider, Amy Wallace. So again, I will go back to my opening statement. This is how we're going to get justice, by these types of publications that are going to outlive the memory of these transcripts that were recently released by the so-called U.S. Department of Justice. This case is not going to die. Donald Trump's people have to get together and figure out how they're going to get around this issue. This could sink his administration. He will lose whatever moral authority and ethical capital that he's been able to amass over the past several years, primarily based on the fact that the election was stolen from him and the fact that they took a shot at him once or twice and he survived the assassination attempts, right? You have our sympathy, Mr. President, for that, but you have to account for all the questions that, legitimate questions that are being raised so far as your personal and professional conduct is concerned, because a voice is speaking to the American and the world public from out of the grave. Her name is Virginia Roberts Giuffre.
And let me just give people let me just give them a bit of detail on the book,
please.
So, a posthumous and unsparing memoir will be published this fall. Publishing house Alfred Knopf said, "Nobody's Girl, a memoir of surviving abuse and fighting for justice." The release date is scheduled for October the 21st, publisher confirmed. Virginia had been working on Nobody's Girl with author journalist Amy Wallace and had completed the manuscript for the 400-page book. The publisher's statement includes an email from Virginia to Wallace a few weeks before her death, saying that it was her heartfelt wish the memoir be released regardless of her circumstances. Mm-hmm. The contents of this book is crucial as it aims to shed light on the systemic failures that allow the tracking of vulnerable individuals across borders, her email read. It is imperative that the truth is understood and that the issues surrounding this topic are addressed, both for the sake of justice and awareness. Well said, Virginia.
Well, if your producer can possibly obtain a advanced copy of the book, like a PDF, please send it to me. I'll review it, and I'll come back on the show and give a preview, an assessment. This is going to be an important piece of work.
That would be great. Can I just ask you a couple of questions, though, about some of the things that you've said so far? Because you've raised some really important points. I mean, you know, the Epstein case is so old. Who would have seen it put the administration in this position it's in presently? And yes, you know, we eat, live, and breathe this, Professor, but even for the average person on the street, when an administration campaigns on countering the human transportation of kids, and they're going to do all these resources, increase the laws, go after these SOBs, and then the poster child for those SOBs is incarcerated, then all of a sudden, the very people who were professing to, you know, go after these people and put them away for long periods of time are now kowtowing to the poster child, Maxwell, the human transporter poster child person, kowtowing to her, putting her in a soft prison, rewarding her, instead of going up to the survivors and sitting down with the survivors and putting people higher up the ladder in prison. I mean, that just is a slap on the face to everybody that supported this administration on the basis they were campaigning to go after these people.
And you know, the everyday person, the person on the street, they're feeling that same sense of betrayal, profound, because everybody can relate to abused people. A lot of people in just walking around never got their justice, having been battered or exploited as children or as women or whatever group that's vulnerable out there, so-called unaccompanied immigrant children. They've been abused as well. And this has touched every single segment of the American and really the world population as well. So we resonate that. This is why we meaning the general population. I'm sure there's some people who are callously indifferent to it, but for the most part, we're all invested in it. And this is why it's not going away. And Donald Trump and his people are not going to be able to sweet talk us or finesse his way out of this. So I want to propose certain concrete strategies that the people, the people's court, can enact to show our displeasure, to voice it, because we're not going to wait for the ballot box. We can, at any public appearance or a news conference, whenever Donald Trump shows up, we will just turn our backs on him silently, and he'll know that we are rejecting everything that's coming out of his lying mouth and the whole whitewash. Turn your back on him. That's a silent protest, right? I've already mentioned the fact that you keep publishing and keep doing the cast. This is the information. This is why the case has not died, because of independent, truly independent journalism. And the other part of the process is to look at the criminal justice system itself, especially its adjunct criminology. And this is what I've been doing over the past couple of weeks in my own show. I talked about the cult of academic criminology. Now, criminology in America, and I want to compare notes with you, Sean, whether it's going on in the UK in the same way, but it's been captured by the DEI people, criminology. It's been captured by academic feminists, queer theory, everything that people laugh about on the Joe Rogan show, all these retooled comedians. They're saying, oh, yeah, Michelle Obama's a man. Madame Macron is a man. They're still yucking it up over there. But in the meantime, there's a whole generation of professionals, people who are going to be in the law, in the counseling professions, in law enforcement, legislators at the undergraduate level, taking courses in criminology, which is a hugely, at least in America, expanding major. And what is it all about? It's about supposed systemic racism that should mean that we should get rid of the police and go soft on criminals. And we've seen, this is something that Donald Trump has done for the positive. We've seen in the past week that Washington, D.C., for the first time in a long while, has had a zero homicide week. Right. And of course, the people on the left, the Democratic Party, they hate that because that's their clientele. So we have to be very careful that while we're holding the president to account, we're not also feeding into MSNBC, who are celebrating this chaos, this sort of civil war within MAGA about what's going on with Donald Trump's promise to release the files, to protect vulnerable populations from exploitation of the S variety and the human, you know what, cargo system. He was going to do all that, right? So that's the difficulty that we're facing. But on an individual level, we can express our dissatisfaction by going public with our reservations or criticism about the Trump administration and his minions, from Pam Bondi to Kash Patel to Dan Bongino. They're rank amateurs, all of them. And they might be on the way out, from what I can understand, anyway. And just keep putting the information out there and making sense of it, going pouring through the transcripts and giving our assessment. Todd Grandy, I mean, the whole conversation sounds so pervy to me. It's a little perverted conversation that you might have heard down in Palm Beach, right, at one of these estates. A little private conversation amongst themselves, because Todd Grandy, being from the boonies, being from Brooklyn Law School, he didn't just go to law school. He went to night school. Right. And I'm not disparaging that. More credit to him. He had to come up the hard way. The point I'm making is that he over-identifies with the class of people that he's pretending to bring to justice. He's on their side of the table. And that, in essence, is what the whole bar is about anyways. And that's why it's called the bar. There on the other side, David Oscar Marx, Todd Blanche, they're on the other side of the bar. We are on this other. They're not in combat with each other. They're in combat with us. We have to wrap our minds around the realities, right? The realities of the judge. I mean, Dickens started out as a law clerk himself, right? He knew it as a young man. He got to witness it. He wrote about it. This is not news to anybody who's halfway literate. This is part of our political culture. So we should be mature enough to recognize it when we see it now in 2025, especially now when we have the social medias at our disposal to disseminate this information almost immediately.
So why are you saying then that the administration is trapped by the Epstein story? Is that because they are all beholden to intelligence? So they've gestured that they're going to do something, but intelligence has come in and said, uh-uh.
The simple answer is yes. Donald Trump likes to use this phrase, well, you don't hold the cards, I hold the cards. Well, I'll invoke that phrase to say he doesn't hold the cards. Tel Aviv holds the cards. Bibi Netanyahu holds the cards, right? He is an American agent, by the way, who's masquerading as an Israeli. He went to high school in America. His name's not Netanyahu. He gave himself an Israeli name so he could pass in that capacity, right? So we have some really interesting ethno-religio politics going on here that a lot of media doesn't want to talk about because they want to be accused of prejudice, religio-ethnic prejudice right here. But you have to look at it honestly and see what's really going on here. Right, going back through Robert Maxwell, one of his many identities, we all know his story by now. He belonged to intelligence. Ghislaine Maxwell belonged to intelligence. Jeffrey Epstein belonged to intelligence. They're all part of this same network. And I think the reason why a lot of MAGA types are hanging on to this because it's just the reality that America's been captured and is now a client state of Israel. The great United States is captured. It's mind-boggling because we've been told for the last 70 years that the United States is the empire that rules the world, right? But as it turns out, the United States and its vast military and its economic resources has been used as a cat's paw for a poor little nation surrounded by violent, terroristic Arab states, the only democracy in the Middle East. Oh, please.
But what about the role of the deep state in this? Couldn't it be argued that Israel is just an instrument of the deep state and the deep state is the globalist hub?
The deep state is Israel. They're one and the same. And of course, if you mention that, they're going to say, just like if you use the term Siamese, I looked it up in the Jewish American lexicon. And if you use the word Siam, it's supposed to be a anti-Semitic term, like as if it's some giant conspiracy. But the deep state is captured. And even in the right-wing media, they won't admit that because you know who they like to blame? They like to blame the yellow man. They say it's the Chacoms are doing it.
Well, all right, let's look at, if we look at the war in Ukraine, which I believe is, you know, Ukraine's just being used as a proxy by the deep state to attack Russia and try and break Russia up, then, you know, that's the deep state I see, you know, doing its thing. But that's not Israel, is it? Israel's not involved in that. So there's a lot more going on to the deep state than just Israel. That's my point.
Well, the Ukraine is Eretz Israel. Greater Israel. Israel was not going to be Israel where it is currently. They were looking for sites. I'm talking about the classical Zionists like Theodor Herzl. They were looking for places in Latin America and Africa. So they said, well, let's go to the British Mandate in Palestine. There's a whole history behind this, right? But they've always, in fact, the ancestral home of Zionism is what is today called Ukraine. Kiev and all those people. But it's also not coincidentally, it's an important point. It's not only the homeland, and that's why this war is going on. This should be clear what's going on here in Ukraine, Russia, the United States, Israel, right? It's not just the political homeland of Zionism, Ukraine, right? Kiev, places like this. But it's also the homeland of Zabatai Zvi and Yakub Frank, as in Sabbatean Frankist. So you have a metaphysical occult system that underlies the political, economic, political Zionism. We're only looking at part of it. You have to look at it in its totality. The metaphysical, Sabbatean Frankist, and the political, economic, which is political Zionism. They come together. This is why it's so powerful. This is why the Gordian knot has up to now been uncuttable, because people haven't put they're analytically being kept apart and separate, but no more. We are synthesizing these seemingly independent historical realities. Yes.
So how do we get to the point then where Zelensky, a Jewish comedian actor, is working on the behalf of the neo-Nazi interests in Ukraine?
Well, you know, I think this is the greatest failure of the Trump administration. He welcomed him into the White House. He's treating Zelensky as an honest broker for the people of Ukraine. So that raises questions in my mind, not about Zelensky, raises questions in my mind about Donald Trump. Who does he really represent? It's seeming that more and more that he doesn't represent the American people. He represents a very powerful subset of the American people who have captured the political system, the political economic system, education, and the culture industries, and publishing, which is part of the culture industries. Those are the people that he represents. Now, he can go down in history as the signal character in American history who was at last be able to cut that Gordian knot that has enslaved the American people for the past 80 years. Or he can go down in history as an ignominious stooge of a bunch of extortionists who cut their teeth in Brooklyn, extorting people by throwing bricks through their fences or infiltrating the labor rackets and creating civil disturbance against capital or against arsonists or extortionists or blackmailers. That's who he's working for as it stands to today.
So how the hell does he get out?
It's his choice. Yeah.
How the hell does he get out of the Epstein trap then? Because it's just been running for 2 months now, this story.
It's really simple. Truth. All Donald Trump has to do is to say, listen, I'm going to humble myself in the face of the American people and the world public, but I've been wrong. I'm guilty of this, this, and this transgression. We are forgiving people. We're Christians, right? We believe in atonement, rehabilitation, forgiveness. He has to throw himself, contrary to his outsized ego, he has to throw himself on the mercy of the American people and world public opinion. Okay, and there's one strategy that we can use as people that will help him, that will help nudge him to this position of atonement, right? And the notion of atonement also has a very strong Judaic resonance as well. So he's going to be able to come clean to all the communities in the United States and in the world. But we can make our appeal not so much to Donald Trump, but to Melania Trump. Go straight to her and say, you are a woman. You worked in a profession where we know this certain system operates under the guise of modeling, acting, the international trafficking of beauty and intelligence. This is how you came to humanity. You can help us, we Americans, you can help us heal by persuading your husband, Donald Trump, the President of the United States, that he needs to throw himself at the mercy of a court of a public opinion and apologize. Start with an apology. Start with a sincere apology for your transgressions. You can start slow. You can say, well, I haven't been forthcoming. I haven't been able to really stay on top of developments. And then he can gradually work us into some of the more nefarious activities that he might have been involved with. And we're going to listen, and we're going to, if he asks for it sincerely, we're going to forgive him.
And if he doesn't do that, then what happens?
Oh, it's not going to be pretty. It's not going to be pretty. There's going to be such a thoroughgoing outbreak of cynicism and opportunism and criminality in the streets. It's going to return to all our institutions because they've been waiting for this moment of vulnerability. It's going to be worse than it was prior to even the lockdown of 2020. It's going to come back with a vengeance. This is why it's so important for Donald Trump to atone for his sins. It is the day of atonement. Otherwise, his problems are going to be much of a much higher magnitude than he could ever imagine.
Do you think that just releasing stuff, Epstein stuff, is just making the situation worse right now because it's all been doctored?
Yes. And speaking of doctored, I hope the memoirs of Virginia Giuffre are not doctored as well. There's always that possibility. That's why I want to look, obtain a advanced copy and go through it and see how it's being spun, right? It's going through Alfred A. Knopf Publishers. It's a mainstream trade publisher. It's probably owned by Hachette or one of these globalist corporations. So I don't necessarily trust it. I do trust this book because it's not Alfred A. Knopf. It comes from you. It hasn't gone through a bunch of ideological editorial control and spin. Right, so I'm not going to this blindfolded and say, well, it's supposedly Virginia Giuffre. It could be a big psyop for all we know, but we're gonna assess that. But we don't have to wait till October 21st. We can start now. Whenever Donald Trump shows up at a public event or a press conference, we simply turn his back on him.
You've had quite a few questions come in. Do you want to start going over them?
Absolutely.
All right. This is from Agent Orange. Do the JE files include financial crimes? And would it implicate politicians and kingpins?
I assume that the financial crimes are embedded in it, right? That's why Todd Blanche kept talking about massage. She's obsessed with massage. Because what he's involved with is giving the American public, the world public, a hand job. That's why he keeps talking about massage. He's a lascivious, voyeuristic hack. Todd Blanche. So, yeah, you know, they talk about Palm Beach. Grease the palm, and the other part of the palm is a hand job. That's your Palm Beach, and that's your high crimes and misdemeanors there. Yeah, it's there. And both parties are affected. It's really the whole system that's being investigated here that's under indictment. It's ugly. And it's not Democrats. Most people are sophisticated and know that it's not a partisan issue anymore. We're talking about the very soul of the American Republic that's under dispute right now. So, yeah, financial, definitely.
Let me just add to that, then, that Epstein's entire accumulation of wealth is one big financial crime. And during the Maxwell interview, questions about that were raised, for example, about the Wexner transfer of the property, about the Black transfer of the financial fees, the over $100 million. And Maxwell's response was, for example, with the Wexner property, that Jeffrey would receive such things in exchange for the financial services he was rendering these people. And she said that he'd set himself up with someone who, if they'd been ripped off for $1 billion, he would try and trace that money down, return it to the rightful owner, and get a piece of the action. So what was your interpretation of what she said, you know, about those things, Professor, and specifically about the transfer of the property and the money from Wexner and Black?
Well, she comes off as someone who's naive, ignorant of transactions that were going on right in front of her. Not to mention probably she was implicated in them. She just lied her way through it, all the way through the day and a half of the proffer agreement. And Todd Grandy didn't challenge her on any of it because they're both on the same side of the bar. But she was implicated, and we don't even need to argue that point. She was convicted of all these crimes. She was convicted of perjury, correct? The real issue is that she is being put into a halfway house situation as a intermediate step to complete freedom, and she's going to get away with it. Will the court of public opinion allow that to happen? Not this time. Not this time. We have so much information out there. We have great authors who are putting this down in hard copy and are going public with this information. There's no way for these people to hide anymore. And they, even if they own Alfred A. Knopf Publishers or Condé Nast Publications, they can't control all the information anymore like they used to. So they need to atone for their sins. And maybe we can start afresh. It can happen. I sincerely believe it can happen.
Aren't things so precarious right now with what's going to happen next with Maxwell that perhaps a deal will be brokered with her whereby she's going to get released, you know, 6 months to a year out or something when it's, the story's not so hot?
Yeah, I think she's on her way out. I'm being real here. She's on her way out. The fact that her attorney, David Oscar Mark, was able to even get this proper agreement hearing was the victory itself. The day and a half of testimony was just sort of a show. The fact that he can negotiate that. And by the way, if you read his bio, David Oscar Mark, it's glowing. I mean, there's a whole specialty in the field of criminal law that focuses just on white-collar crime, and he's a specialist in it. He's won multiple. He's a fairly young attorney, too. He's at the top, right? So Ghislaine Maxwell knew who she was contracting. She was buying access to the highest reaches of political economic power in the United States and its senior partner in Tel Aviv. She knew that. That's what you're buying. That's what you're getting. It's not about the transcripts. It's not about, well, I can't really remember if this happened during the Clinton Foundation or after, and I don't know who was on. It's not that about it. It's buying access to the great decider. That's Donald J. Trump. So I think it's a foregone conclusion that she's on her way out. But that doesn't mean that we're going down in defeat. Court is still in session for us. Pardon me?
A few people have asked, where will the proceeds of Virginia's book go? Well, the majority of it will go to the publisher if it's a traditionally published deal.
Yeah, I didn't consider that question. Maybe there's a victim's fund. I'm just guessing at this point. I'm sure Amy Wallace is going to get her fee. She probably has a percentage deal, the agents and all that. It's probably not going to be a lot of money involved. I just want to make sure that the editorial content itself is for real and not something that has been manipulated in her name.
On Kindle.
Yes, or Kindled.
So if you traditionally publish a book, you get a small percent of what it's sold for, and then your literary agent gets a piece of that. So, for example, when I published my first book through Random House, it was a £10 book, and after everything, I was getting 38 pence a copy.
Oh,
so, yeah. You know, it adds up if you're selling millions of books, of course, and I hope that Virginia's book does. Mm-hmm. And my understanding is she was married at the time of her unalivement. So I imagine, you know, if the money's whatever royalties, the percentage of royalties that's going into her estate, would probably go to the husband.
Could be. Are they still married? I thought there might have been a divorce or a separation or something. You know who would know her? The attorney for her estate would know the answer to this about where the proceeds would go.
Well, I think she was going through a divorce, wasn't she? Oh, no, you're right. She had split. She had split. She was not still married. She was reported to have lived with him and their children in North Perth, Australia, but she had separated from her husband earlier in 2025, and he was facing charges related to. Yeah, so according to this, then, I'm just trying to find out if an actual divorce went through. Let's see. Yeah, it's looks like. Can't find out. Yeah, but that would be interesting because that would determine where those royalties are going. Yeah. In terms of this thing. All right. So Waffles Biscuits wants to know if Ghislaine is caught lying in her transcript, will she get more time?
Well, according to the agreement, and this is set out at the initial few minutes of the proffer agreement, it said that she's not in jeopardy for anything that she might say. If it's a misstatement or a misrepresentation, she got a free pass. So she could have lied her face off and there'd be no repercussions for it. And she already is a convicted liar, a perjurer. Right. So let's just get over the reality that she's going to skate. That's going to happen. So we really should start focusing on what is going to be our response to that. Are we going to let the memory of Virginia Giuffre and the many, many other women and children who went unnamed, who were victimized by this system, right? That is our motivation to achieve justice for these unknown girls or boys or children underage, as well as the other victims of this whole system, because we want it to stop. We want it to end. We want justice.
So I watched a video by Dr. G about the Maxwell interview, and we're getting Dr. G on within the week. And he was pointing out that Maxwell's tendency to say something as if it was a fact, but then when she was questioned, for example, about Prince Andrew with something that was public record, she would change her answer because she realized that the person asking the question, knew from the public record that something else was correct. So she'd just go from saying something the complete opposite to agree with what she was being corrected to.
Well, that brings me to this observation that I made by probably watching that same piece by Dr. G. He does the body language analysis. Is that the same person, right?
Yeah.
But I'm arguing that Todd Blanche, because of his over-identification with class, privilege, and wealth, he comes from Brooklyn Night School, law school. He wants to be on that side. He wasn't interviewing her. He wasn't even questioning her. He was prompting. I'm talking about Todd Blanche. Todd Blanche was prompting Ghislaine Maxwell. It was not a Q&A situation. It was a prompting session. He was tutoring her.
Louise in the chat has said that video has been removed by YouTube.
Oh, it has? The Dr. G one? Yeah.
Let me just double check that in my, because I just sent it to.
It's pretty harmless. Yeah, it's not that.
Let's see. Epstein Friends Network. Everybody, Dr. G here. No. Oh, no. Yeah, that's a month old one there. That's a month old one. Yeah, it looks like it's forwarded to a month old one now when you press on the link.
It's this
removed? There was an error with the video. And then you tap it and it goes to a month old one. Yeah, it looks like it is gone.
Oh, okay. I saw it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was probably getting too much traffic and they pulled it. Well, this interview here, as soon as it goes live, I'm making a MP4 of a copy of it as a backup.
I think we've learned where to draw the line these days to prevent such disappearances of our videos. Mm-hmm. All right, let's see. Maxwell is blaming everything on Virginia. And a few people have asked whose name was blanked out, and that was Virginia's in some of it. Mm-hmm. They unredacted her boyfriend's name but redacted hers. Can you please do some coverage on this as nobody else is? So basically Waffles is asking about Maxwell blaming Virginia.
You know, I didn't pick that up. It seems like she seemed to be oblivious or ignorant about anybody that walked into the the facility there. She was playing dumb.
Did you hear the bit where she went ad hominem on Virginia, talking about her being a druggie and all that stuff?
I must have missed that. Is that page 95?
I don't know. I just remember. Okay. It culminated
I'll have to go back and look at that. And if so, that's the most emotive that she was in the entire interview.
She was very bitter. She gave Virginia's backstory in her own interpretation. I mean, she was very bitter when she was describing Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry, I missed that part.
That's all right. All right, so let's see. We did that one. I wonder. Listening to Maxwell made me feel sick. I wonder what percentage of what she said was factual. Not much. Oh, yeah, this is an interesting one, because I was wondering why on earth has she just done this hypothetical situation about El Chapo and the Sinaloa cartel? And Agent Orange is asking, is that an attempt to steer the investigation in a different direction?
Yeah, that seems to be in the news now, because the DOJ supposedly is coming up against the Latin American drug cartels coming in through the border. So,
okay.
I don't recall that passage right there, but it seems like a diversionary move.
What it was, when she was asked about Epstein's, how he made his money, she just said, well, I'll give you an example. He set himself up as a collector of bad debts. Mm-hmm. For example, if Chapo had stolen $1 billion from the Sinaloa cartel and that money had been laundered offshore, then Chapo could contact Jeffrey and Jeffrey would find the money and Chapo would give him a piece of the action. That's what she said.
Mm. That sounds like a far-fetched scenario.
Yeah.
Just like most of the conversation.
Do we know what's happened to Virginia's kids? I don't. No. I don't.
Yeah. And I think they should be left alone. You know, just kept out of the news.
So someone's asking about, did Maxwell express how she felt about what Jeffrey did to the young girls? And she just dismissed it. I mean, she acknowledged she'd been convicted of it, but she was just like, yeah, I introduced massage ladies to him. They were in their 20s, professional massage ladies. Mm-hmm. I was never present when this stuff was going on. I mean, I may have been rubbing his foot when a girl was topless. That's the line she drew.
Right. And of course, none of them were underage. She kept underscoring that fact. So she lied all the way down the line. I mean, we have counter testimony by victims who have testified otherwise. But she has immunity. She's not going to be zapped for lying through her teeth to Todd Blanche.
What about the narrative she gave whereby, you know, Jeffrey was all sweetness and light when they met, but over time he became more deviant, but she distanced herself from him by then?
My gosh, I don't know. I mean, like I said, the Todd Grandy, the type, his line of questioning and what came out of it sounds like softcore pornography more than anything else. They want to just bring out all these salacious overtones there so that we're going to be hung up on it.
All right, so we're nearly at the hour then. So in summary, Professor, mm-hmm. I'm just going to try and give a summary of your thoughts, and then you can come in and let me know if I'm correct here then. So, you know, you're saying that the Maxwell interview was a farce and that they're all in the same club, and that club is owned by intelligence. And the prime mover, you think, in this situation is Israel and Israel intelligence, and that they're all beholden to those forces. And no matter what they posture and gesture and pantomime, they're going to give us some red meat. It is all theatrics. They're all acting, and we're never going to get anything of any substance that's going to incriminate anyone higher than Jeffrey and Ghislaine, because those people are part of the apparatus, and the apparatus must be protected at all costs.
Well, that's a superb summary that captures exactly what I said. However, remember, there's a way out of this, and Donald J. Trump holds the key to it. He needs to throw himself at the mercy of the American and the world public by asking for forgiveness. Just get out ahead of it, and then we can start again. We can start anew.
But when you were saying that, most people in the chat were saying Trump would never do that. He never apologizes. He's narcissistic, etc. So does that mean that the Epstein story could burn the whole house down at some point?
Well, I don't think it's going to burn the whole house down, but I hold up hope that Trump will have a come to Jesus moment. If he doesn't, his name will go down in the historical annals in infamy. I don't think he wants that. I think now he's playing for historical memory. He wants to remember it as the greatest president of the United States since George Washington. He's really aiming for that. He has to overcome his colossal ego. We know that. But you know what? If he does come forward and throws himself at the mercy of the American public, we're going to love him all the more for it.
Put a one in the chat, folks, if you think that scenario is likely. Trump's going to overcome his ego, throw himself at the mercy of the public. Put a two in the chat if you think it's going to be business as usual. And we're not going to get any justice for any survivors. No one higher up the ladder is ever going to be held to account. Put a three in the chat if you think the Epstein story could burn the whole house down, because the shenanigans they're pulling right now are just making them look absolutely like ludicrous, condescending hypocrites, talking to us like we're absolute idiots. And the people are not going to put up with it for much longer if it continues at this rate. Yeah, I think people are not as optimistic as yourself, Professor.
Well, I didn't say it was going to happen. I'm saying that this is what he needs to do in order to put his affairs straight. That's what he needs to do. I lean more towards the number two scenario because I'm a realist, but I'm also a man. Pardon me?
You called it with Diddy and Comey.
Yeah, but you know what? He might surprise us. Right. He dodged the bullet, right? Literally, Donald Trump did, right? He might surprise us and say, listen, I have a huge ego. I realize that finally. I want to bring us all together as Americans, and we're going to make it, we're going to set it straight, and then I'll be forgiven.
Do you think there's do you think there's a fear factor from dodging the bullet? Whereby he realizes he was this close to ending up like JFK. If he pushes the deep state any further, the bullet will hit next time.
Well, that might be in the back of his mind. He's only human, right? He knows that the crosshairs are trained on him, but I think he's playing for the historical gallery now. He's playing for the history books. And if he wants to be remembered as the great world leader that he was hoping for, then he's going to have to apologize. He start with just a modest apology. He can just climb down a little bit. He doesn't have to throw himself on the ground and rent his garments and mea culpa. He doesn't have to do that. He just start gently. And then eventually we're going to see a new person. It's going to be a makeover in the good sense of the word, right? Maybe I'm being overly optimistic. I don't know. But that's a scenario I think could happen. Because we're not letting go of the story. It's not going to go away. No matter what they've tried, it's not, even World War III is not going to stop. We're going to be sitting in the rubble, you know, once Zelensky throws the drone missiles back at us that we sold him recently. We're going to be sitting in the rubble and say, oh, what about the files? We want to see the files. And on the cities, and it's been burnt to cinders, but we want to see the Epstein files.
So Professor Hamamoto has got 60,300 subscribers and 387 videos. Please subscribe. I've just put the link in the live chat. It's also in the description box if you're watching it. And he's got such gems posted recently, 19 hours ago. Brian C. Koberger and the Cult of Academic Criminology. 7 days ago, we've got Roger Corman and the Industrial Engineering of Social Psychopathy. 2 weeks ago, we've got Carbalistic Dark Magic of Wellness, Maven Gwyneth Paltrow. Oh, God. I've got to watch that one. And let's have a look. We've also got latest. Ooh, you're doing more lives, aren't you, these days than actual videos? P. Diddy was the latest video. Almost a year ago, Operation P. Diddy on Intelligence Takedown. Yeah, so please subscribe to the professor's channel. Here it is in the live chat. Huge thank you for all your questions. Huge thank you for the professor for coming on. Any closing thoughts, my friend?
Peace and love, as Ringo Starr likes to say.
Oh, brilliant. This is all right. Yes, much love, everyone. I will let you go and close the show, and take care, my friend. Cheerio.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. All right, folks, phenomenal interview with the professor as usual. Always look forward to speaking with him. Such a delight. And next up, we've got, and it's tomorrow, the next video, actually. We have got, because of the Meghan Markle thing coming out, we have got Lauren is back at 7 p.m. with Markle Netflix Show Exposed. And she did an expose on Jay-Z and Roc Nation last night. If you missed that one, please check it out. Baby Ziggy has just come into the burst into the room. Put one in the chat if you want to see Baby Ziggy wave goodbye to you before I sign off. Put a two in the chat if you don't want to see Baby Ziggy. Baby Ziggy sounds like he wants to come on. Oh, Barbara's coming back as well, ex-model. Surviving Epstein's Black Book Part 2. And that is August 29th at 9 p.m. Babe, oh, he's here. He's here. Come on, little man. Come on, little man. Look at this. Do you want to wave? Do you want to wave to everybody? Look at him. Do you want to give him a wave? Tiki, 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 tiki. Give him a wave. Give him a wave, Ziggy. Give him a wave. Give him a wave now. Look at that little boy. Woo! Bye-bye. Say bye-bye, viewers. Bye-bye. Right, let me turn this. Let me end this. Oh, thank you, everyone. We'll hope to see some of you with Lauren on Markle tomorrow. Cheerio.